You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I'm your host, Armand. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. ClockRadioSpeakers.com is powered by Tumblr. You can find us on Facebook, Facebook.com/ClockRadioSpeakers. Our preferred method of communication, Would that be safe to say, Doc, is Twitter?
Yeah, we go on the Twitter from now and again.
Yeah, we go on the Twitter at CRS Podcast. Also hashtag Clock Radio Speakers. Also hashtag CRS. We check those.
Whatever hashtag y'all want to use, basically.
Yeah. And whatever you want to do, I have to cut this short because I have to sneeze. And it went away. I hate sneezing.
Well, nobody likes it.
Not like Vince McMahon hates sneezing. Have you heard that story?
No. But I'm sure, obviously, you have.
Yes, several. Vince McMahon hates sneezing because he can't control it.
Yeah, that sounds kind of funny at first. And you go like a little deeper. You're like, that's kind of creepy, actually.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very Vince McMahon-y, who just turned 70 yesterday.
70?
7-0.
Wow.
Crazy.
Oh, man. I'm suddenly very aware of my own mortality. 70?
Yeah, man.
I would have guessed 60.
Nah, son.
70.
He was 60 back in the, was that Ruthless Aggression? Yeah, about 5 years ago or 10 years ago. That's Ruthless Aggression, fam. That's Eddie Guerrero, the wrestler that we shall not name because he's been erased from every single book of wrestling memory ever.
Now, I know they tried to do that with Hulk, but they're not really going to be able to do that with Hulk.
No, they can't do that with Hulk.
He's too big of a, I mean, there's too much legacy there.
Yeah, they can't do that with Hulk Hogan.
So what's going on, man? We started did the introduction. Did you give the good people your Twitter handle?
I did. All we got is SoundCloud, 4th District, and you.
Well, first of all, we'll put the show first. Please visit our SoundCloud. It's really
now
good.
You make me feel bad.
No, look, we have a routine. It's all good. SoundCloud.com/ClockRadioSpeakers. And as always, you can find our stuff first. We put it up first on 4thDistrict.com before it even makes it to the website. So please check it out, Dan and the good people over there. And if you are so inclined, you can follow me on Twitter at @Doc_Beats, not a Z. I do not post often. Do not worry. What's going on, man?
Man, I've got a show Friday. 4th annual Polar Showcase. Not really a whole set. I'm just doing a song with one of the artists on the label, a guy by the name of Caesar. Producer by the name of Satele. We've got a record called The Miracle. It's a remix to a record that they have called Miracles. And it's on SoundCloud. I put together a playlist on my SoundCloud at Armand Wake Up. You can follow that there. You can hear the song. And then I'm doing another song, which will probably be something that's not released yet, but people have heard.
Okay.
And then I got selected to be a part of the Independence Day Festival.
Okay.
That's September 19th and 20th. That's here in Columbus. That's a 2-day festival. Columbus is really, it's really like hipster town. It really, really is.
Yeah,
so we're really big into local businesses, you know, farmers markets, you know, just a really big local community. So
okay.
The Independence Day Festival is like a big gathering of all of the independent businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm performing at that festival time and date to be determined. So one of those 2 days and one of those times or whatever, but should be dope. Shout out to Jay Rawls. And yeah, that's pretty much it. What's up with you?
When we opened the show, I was thinking like, you know, sometimes when we do the show, I wish I had like a bank of sound effects. And for whatever reason today, I just wanted the Who Kid sound effects. The shot, you know, the gun, the babies crying, like
Soda
the whole
pop.
There's like 20 people listening to this who remember that stuff.
So see the kids playing was a little later. I don't like that Who Kid. I like the gunshots and nonstop. I like that.
Yeah.
That's the Who Kid I remember.
I've told the story before, but I'll say it again. Believe it or not, the only actual the only version of that Lloyd Banks record Without You is the version that was on This Is 50 with the kid crying in it. Like, it's the worst. It's the absolute worst. You gonna play it?
I don't care. There's a G in it. But of course, there's a DJ Who Kid Gun Sounds Library on YouTube.
Of course there is.
But it sounds like it's just a G Unit song circa 2006. And I don't want to go there. So we're going to keep it moving.
So anyway, what's going on with me? I don't know. Not much, man. I was in a Joel Santana mood this morning. So I don't, you know.
So you're moving.
The movement is moving.
And you're moving. Okay. The movement is moving. The movement is moving. Is moving.
Like the three singles he put out for that second album in 2005. Boy, those have not aged well.
What the game's been missing?
Yeah. So that's the Whistle Song, the Postman record, and Clockwork.
Well, Clockwork has been heavily discussed on Clock Radio Speakers.
Yes.
If we ever, we should make a Clock Radio Speakers playlist of all the songs that we end up referencing consistently on the show. Mm. And that's definitely on there.
Yeah, Clockwork. But no, like the first, like when you hear the Whistle record, you're like, this really happened? Like there's not just a whistle in the beat, there's a whistle breakdown. Like the calm down off the, yeah, oh man. 2005 was a magical time for music. Couldn't even stay with a straight face. No, man, things are good. Yeah, I got nothing new to report. You been listening to anything new?
No. No. Listening to Taylor Gray's album. That'll be available on the 4th. That just went on, pre-order just went on sale.
Oh, so it's not even that you're listening to anything new. You're listening to stuff that's pre-new.
It's not even out yet. So I'm either listening to old stuff or I'm in the future.
Such a rapper thing.
No, I've been watching a lot of battle rap and listening to Dre's album sparingly. And
you so far ahead of your time.
I'm about to start another life. Look behind you. I'm about to pass you twice. Or if we want to get a little older than that, I'm so ahead of my time. My parents haven't met yet. I know about that Big L, that Lamont Coleman. So, yeah, that's in Marcus Graham stuff. You know.
Yeah.
We've been moving. That movement's been moving real crazy.
Got a Zuvi coming.
Shot another video for that. Yeah, Zuvi on the way. Shot another video for that. So we're
you can say it's a lituation.
Oh my God! Absolutely. Lituation, Zuvi, is there another one? There is another one. Khaled, another one.
All right. So last week we talked, actually the last 2 weeks, we've talked about a lot of Dr. Dre. So 2 weeks ago we talked about the album Compton. Last week we talked extensively about Straight Outta Compton. So to wrap that up that conversation. So one of the things that we talked about on the show was, so one of the things that people have pointed out that Straight Outta Compton left out was Dre's, we'll say alleged, but I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit, probably a little bit more than that, considering he's now kind of apologized for it. But, Dre's alleged history of violence with women, how Straight Outta Compton did not portray it. You and I talked about why. And if you didn't hear that, go back and check that out on clockradiospeakers.com. But what came out since we last recorded was that there was an article, I think, in the New York Times. Apple sort of came out and defended him, and essentially it was, he was young, he's a changed guy now. And then Dre apologized to the women, like in general. He didn't name names. He didn't say, I apologize to D Barnes, or even like, I apologize to D Barnes for blah, 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 blah. It was, let me see if I can get the exact quote. I think it was something like what?
To the women I hurt or something.
To the women I hurt.
Sound like the apology of a gigolo.
Gigolo. it's never a bad time to sing that song. So on Friday, Dre had directed at you, right, to the women I've hurt. What'd you say?
Nah, I said pimp bones in my body.
Pimp bones.
Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, and then today, it was New York Times had a follow-up where basically the title is Dr. Dre's apology is acknowledged with some misgivings, which basically is the women who he is hurt, who he did not name names, who they had varying degrees of opinions about it. D Barnes basically said, thank you for apologizing. I'm really not trying to quote there. That's just the general consensus was, let me see if I can find her. Oh, she says specifically, bravo, Andre. Humility is true self-knowledge, right?
Okay.
Let's see.
What about, did Michelle A respond?
Yeah. She said, I don't really think it's a sincere apology. She says, I didn't ask for a public apology. And I think if he's going to apologize, he should do it individually. To just group us like we are nothing and nobody.
Whoa.
I just don't think it's sincere. Treat us like we have names. It's true.
Nah, I could understand that. But then at the same time, then why did she go public with her story?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's entirely possible that people simply reached out to her and that she was okay with talking. I think there's, to me, and I don't know the whole history, I think there's a difference between I'm actively seeking to say something versus somebody called me up and I was willing to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. So let me just ask you this real quick. Were you surprised that Dre apologized about all this, considering this is not like a new allegation or anything?
No, I think again, with there's so much, man, it takes me back to this weekend. I went to a friend of mine's birthday party. Shout out to King Vader, happy birthday. And so there was two different types of people at this party. It was downtown. So you've got some of the, you know, some of the older hip hop heads, and then you had some of the younger, the new energy, sort of the hipster rap, all that stuff. And I've never seen so many NWA shirts and Compton hats ever. And so now this is a new generation of artists, or this new generation of kids who don't know about NWA. So because right. they don't know about Straight Outta Compton, they definitely don't remember the Dee Barnes story.
Sure.
So though it's not new in the grand scheme of this is something that was just uncovered while filming this movie, it was something that was represented to the masses or to the general public. So I'm not surprised that Dre responded in the way that he did. Whether it's sincere or not is not something that I believe any of us can judge. But, you know, he did it. He acknowledged it. You know, we have to at least give him that, because he could have just ignored it. So
sure, I mean, he theoretically could have just ignored it. But I don't know. You know, Dre is not at a place in his career where he is, you know, the young pissed off guy anymore.
Right.
He's 50 years old. He's a very wealthy man who represents the wealthiest corporation in America, who has two projects out right now that he's trying to sell to the masses. So he didn't like have to apologize, obviously, but he needed to apologize. I think part of it too is, I think just in a weird way, it's going to be, it sounds such a strange word. I'm going to use the word acceptance, but that's not to really imply that we ever accepted it necessarily, but just the implied, we'll say ignorance, that American culture, and maybe even specifically hip hop culture, used to have towards this sort of thing has really changed. Mm-hmm. And I imagine there's probably a number of things that if we were to go back and sort of think about like controversies from when we were growing up, that would be viewed in just a fantastically different light now.
Right.
And I think this is just one of them, you know, it's just where society's in a different place now. I think for better, like, you know, I don't think anybody's going to sit here and go, man, remember the days when we used to make fun of women because they dared speak up that they got beat? Like nobody's saying that. Right. I don't know. I think it's, I wasn't surprised at the apology. I was surprised at the speed at which like it was like they got out, like clearly like, you know, Dee Barnes thing came out. Dre's got the story in the New York Times, the apology. Like, the whole cycle was so quick. I don't know. It makes me sound like an old man. Like, wow, things happen fast these days. But, you know, like, I don't know. That's really the only thing for me. And the other thing is, I don't know. I wish he would have, you know, he could have specifically said their names. He could have.
Right.
Obviously, the fear there is, like, if there's a quote where he specifically says the names, then he's somewhat admitting, like, direct wrongdoing. Not that there's going to be any sort of civil case or anything like that, but he is directly admitted wrongdoing for a specific, perhaps, thing. And also, it's, you know, it's a lot easier than to have, you know, someone's like, oh, why is Dre apologizing to somebody named Dee Barnes? Let me Google Dee Barnes and Dre real quick and see what pops up. Whereas, oh, Dre's apologizing. You know, the average person might just skim it and move on. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, you got anything else you want to say about that?
Nope.
Okay. So you said you've been listening a little bit to the Compton album?
Yep.
I have no desire to listen to it, really. I don't know.
I think, you know, people have been saying, and I thought about this the other day, people have been saying that this is one of the best years for hip hop.
Really?
And yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got everybody came out with an album, you know, everybody short of Jay-Z, and now people are asking for a Jay album.
Nobody wants a Jay album. And Kanye's not out yet either, but.
And I'm hearing we're going to get some Kanye music this weekend. I
think so.
But
still waiting on Frank Ocean.
Still waiting on Frank Ocean, but we've gotten a lot. We've gotten Kendrick, yeah. We've gotten Drake, we've gotten, you know, we've still gotten some Kanye music, you know, ASAP, Big Sean, J. Cole.
Yeah. Last year, but yeah.
But it was still carried over, and this is the end of last year. But one thing that I've thought about is a lot of the music, I guess my question is, has it stuck?
Mm.
You know, so we've got all these people. all these notable names in hip hop and just in music, music in general, dropping projects. And are these projects sticking? Now, the other question that I ask is, are they sticking because they're good, or are they not stick? Or are they sticking, or are they not sticking because our attention spans are so short?
Hmm.
You know, so for me, I still have Kendrick's album in heavy rotation. You know, is Big Sean's album whack? Is A$AP Rocky's album whack? Is, you know, are all of these artists, is Drake's album whack? Not necessarily, but am I listening? Have I listened to them much past the Clock Radio Speakers episode? No.
For me, the one that's kind of surprisingly interesting is the Drake project, actually. Songs that when they came out, I acknowledged, yeah, they're catchy, and people really seem to have latched onto them. But it's an interesting project because it's probably got too many tracks, and some of them, you know, there are definitely duplicates in terms of like, what is this song trying to accomplish, right? But some of those songs are very sticky. You know, they're catchy. And there's something to be said for that sometimes. Like, as an album, I guess I probably like Nothing Was the Same more, but I think in a weird way, it's, if you're reading this, It's Too Late, might have catchier songs on it.
It does. And it was funny. I was listening to Nothing Was the Same a couple weeks ago, and I don't know if that album aged that well.
Mm.
Especially with If You're Reading This, It's Too Late, because it's weird because I think we talked about how Blueprint 3 was sort of the beginning of Jay and Kanye's sort of chemistry.
Right. Right, right.
Which then, you know, without Blueprint 3, Watch the Throne wouldn't have been what it is.
Sure.
So I think that that's the same thing. If You're Reading This, It's Too Late is the child, the stronger, faster child of Nothing Was the Same. It's like he was trying to get some things right. He was trying to go from a different direction from Take Care. And he was in the middle of his turn when Nothing Was the Same came out. And now with If You're Reading This, It's Too Late, he completed the turn. Because people forget, before If You're Reading This, It's Too Late came out, Drake was kind of on a dry spell. He was, that stimulus package was real regular. Yeah, like that was the consensus was, and I can't remember any of those records offhand. I'd have to look them up, but you know, those records, they weren't really hitting like that. They were okay, but they weren't like knock them out the ballpark records.
Okay.
And then, you know, If You're Reading This, It's Too Late sort of brought them back in a sense. But, you know, am I listening to that album? Not necessarily.
That plane just went right down.
Yeah, not necessarily, but you know. Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I don't know.
So, yeah, so Compton, you know, the replay factor will be is always a really, you know, good test of an album's legacy, but for me especially on this one, because like I said on the review, like it's not to say that it's a bad album. It's just like you're comparing it to like two great albums. So it's difficult. You know, kind of almost in a sense of how, you know, when I first heard Only But for Cuban Links 2, right? You're like, well, like there's clearly some good songs on here, but like you're asking me to compare it to my favorite album of all time. Like it's very difficult. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the replay value, I don't know. I want to come back to it, you know, a couple weeks, maybe a month. See if the stuff that bothers me still bothers me. See if the stuff that catches me still catches me. And, you know, we'll go from there.
Yeah. I mean, even, speaking of artists who have one or a collection of amazing projects and are low-key trying to live up to that, I'm finally going to be able to see your man is going to be in Ohio, and I'm going to be able to, I think I'm going to check him out.
Who's that?
Big Crit.
Mm.
Somebody people have largely forgotten about. This week he announced the tour, and he's going to be in Columbus, and I'm going to go.
Yeah?
I'm going to check him out. Yeah, I'm going to check him out. Mac Miller's going to be here too, but I don't like the venue he's going to be at. So that's so really snooty.
No, I hear you. There's like, it's like when I go to New York, there's one venue that, at least the one time I went there, like the bass was like so loud. It was overpowering. I think it's like typically like a dance place, but like, so when you're hearing somebody play, like, it's like, nah, that's not how that's supposed to be. Like, it's supposed to be loud. Yeah. You're supposed to hear the bass, but it's not supposed to, like, you can't hear anything else. So like, I'm sitting there going, I don't like the mix of this live show. I don't know about this place. And I'm like, man, this is the privileged life I leave right now.
Absolutely. Nah, I don't like stuff. Well, I mean, sound as an artist, I'm just used to stuff being loud. But right. as an artist, there's a particular venue in Columbus that's terrible. But I think there's other stuff that I don't like. So I don't want to, honest, I'm old. I don't want to be around a bunch of weed smoke. Mm. You know, I don't want to be, I want to be in a place that's ventilated. When I went to go see Foreign Exchange about a year ago, I think it was a year ago, there were no windows. So it smelled really, really bad in there. It smelled like body. And then of course it's a Foreign Exchange. So there's like a, there's incense and frankincense and myrrh and coconut oil and all that stuff from the natural hair community that's there. But then it was just packed. So it just smelled like bodies. There were no windows, none ever. So, you know, but we'll see.
So Crit's going to a spot that you're like, you give the thumbs
mind.
Up to. You don't
yeah,
mind.
Yeah, I don't mind it. And I just want to see a big Crit show. I think by now he has the discography. Mm. He doesn't really have anything out. So I'm expecting him to, you know, tear through records, mostly mixtape records, because he's not really, you know.
Yeah, you'll probably get Catalactica. You'll get, trying to think, what other record off the... Pay Attention?
I don't know. I don't remember.
The Jim Jones.
I remember liking Catalactica, but I don't remember a whole bunch of records off the album in particular.
Yeah.
If this the case, like, you know, you don't have any projects out, maybe he's coming out with something, but if he doesn't have any projects out, he could do Temptation.
Oh, right. I mean, you know
what I'm saying? Like, he can really go deep into his mixtape catalog, and that's what I'm hoping for.
You're going to be the dude in the crowd shouting, play R4, you know?
No, I'm going to be the guy shouting, do Children of the World. Do Hometown Hero. Like, I want him to do those records. Do Voices. I'm that guy. So we'll see. I doubt we get any of those records. I doubt it. Do something. And I don't mean that in a bad way. He actually has a song called
I hear you though. It's an interesting challenge when you go see somebody who has a strong back catalog that you really like, but you never know, like, what, like, you really want them to play a certain part of their back catalog, but you fear they won't. Like, I think you'll be okay with Crit, right? But yeah. Like, there are some artists who you can imagine going to their show and you're like, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah. I always kind of reference Kendrick's show with that. Mm. Kendrick was Section 80. He did all the records off Section 80 that I wasn't a big fan of. And he did a lot of, I always forget his first project. Well, not OD? His first major one. Which
OD?
One?
OD.
Yeah. He did a bunch of records off OD that I wasn't really big on.
Yeah, I'm guessing a Kendrick album now is probably a little different. I mean, a Kendrick show now is a little different.
He might do Rigor Mortis and he might do Hold Up. That might be as far as we go back.
When I saw him open for Kanye, I mean, granted it was an opening set, so it was shorter, but he just did straight Good Kid, Mad City.
Right.
So you might just get, you know, the big ones off Good Kid, Mad City and then the ones that he really likes off the album.
To Pimp a Butterfly, yeah.
Right.
We'll see. Anyway.
Anyway, I love how we've been talking this whole time. We didn't even have any of this planned out, really. We have a whole topic we want to talk about, and we're just now getting to it. Yeah, and I thought this was going to be the show where we didn't really talk music. It's impossible, though. So we're going to get a little serious for the rest of this week's episode. So we have talked at length on this show about not just the murder. I'll say the murder of Mike Brown. But then the protests that followed, the murder of Eric Garner in New York, the protests that followed in Ferguson when they refused to indict or whatever it was, where they were basically, you know, where the cop in the Michael Brown case wasn't held in any way accountable. So we've certainly talked about what happened in Ferguson. We've talked about the Black Lives Matter movement before, but we are just past the 1 year anniversary of when Michael Brown was shot and killed. And actually, we are exactly on the 1 year anniversary of when he was laid to rest. So I wanted to use this time to talk a little bit about sort of, you know, just to give people a preview, you know, I want us to talk about, share our thoughts, sort of like start like really narrow and local, like actually what has happened in Ferguson over the past year, and then sort of zoom out. So, on the anniversary of Michael Brown's death, there were, I'll say demonstrations. Some people might call them protests. Some people on the extreme right would call them riots, but they weren't riots. It was an attempt to be peaceful demonstration. There was, I'll say chaos that broke out. there was the inevitable police overreaction. We had the appearance of the kookiest thing. The Oath Keepers. Did you see that stuff?
No.
I'm going to Google them right now. The Oath Keepers. Basically, it was older, retired military and police guys who show up in like Oath Keepers gear. And
what is Oath Keepers gear?
So, I'm sorry. So it's if anybody wants to check this out, it's oathkeepers.org. I think they're a little crazy. Basically, it's a group that is made up of former military and police members, and they have like, they'll wear like a little hat that says like their Oath Keeper or whatever, but it's a lot of like camo and like, you know, maybe you might, what you would have called 20 years ago, like army surplus gear. Like they look like they're going into battle, and they've got, they are armed with weapons, and they show up because they want to quote unquote keep the peace. Now, of course, when you have a predominantly African-American group of people who are protesting police in Ferguson, and then a bunch of older white guys with guns show up, you know, it's not even that it's a bad idea. People can, you know, it's America. People have freedom to assemble. What was really notable about it is that the cops couldn't care less. The cops are sort of just letting these guys be off on the side and do their thing, which was basically to walk around and sort of stare at the crowd with guns. Meanwhile, they're, you know, overreacting to what you might call the Black Lives Matter movement. But really, it was a demonstration in Ferguson, because people clearly still, and I don't, you know, there's no reason for them not to be mad. But people are, it's not just mad. People are fed up, right? Is that how you would put it? People are fed up.
I think it reignited something that has been lying dormant for a while. And, you know, you stir up a hornet's nest, you know, you're going to get stung. So I think that's where a lot of it came from. I don't think any of this anger is new. I think it has been seen by a new generation, but things that we're upset about have been in our culture and in our society for as long as I can remember.
Right.
You know, I just think it lied dormant for a while. We didn't really hear about it on a national scale. And then it was just back to back to back to back to back. And it was just poking a stick at a hornet's nest. And, you know, here we are.
Right. You know, for a while, it would be that you would only really hear about what you might consider like incredibly over the top, insane stories of police brutality, right? Like the one that jumps to mind is Sean Bell in Queens.
Yeah.
Right. You know, people would hear, you know, there would be news stories that would pop up, you know, once a year, twice a year. And it was always this just incredibly egregious. I mean, it's always egregious when you kill somebody when you don't need to, right? But these, like, it would always be backed up by like some number. It'd be like, you know, 40 something shots or 50, you know, whatever the number was. And that would always get the media's attention. But what's amazing, and this is what to me the difference over the past year has been, is that I'll say the mainstream, like media, just our culture in this country, never really stopped to think. So we hear, if we have, you know, every 6 months, 12 months, whatever, if we have an example that pops up that makes the news of this over the top example of police brutality, is there smaller, but, and I say smaller in terms of like raw numbers of shots, which is an awful thing to say, but like, are there other things that we're missing? Like that was just not something that we ever really talked about in this country. You know, we just sort of waited for the next tragedy to happen.
Right. I mean, that was the consistent theme. It was that, you know, everybody would get riled up. You know, there would be some media coverage. There'd be a vigil. There would be some anger. There would be some marches, a cry out for some sort of a reformation, some sort of justice, quote unquote, to transpire. You get that for about a week, and then it would just gradually go away until Trayvon Martin was killed.
Right. You know, Mike Brown and Ferguson, that was not the beginning of Black Lives Matter.
No.
Trayvon Martin, that incident certainly changed things. To me, what really changed things, and this is an overused cliche and we sound like old people, it was social media.
Absolutely.
It's the, you know, it's all of a sudden the fact that, you know, it's not just that people don't have to rely on news organizations to report news, but it just completely changes the power dynamic of communication.
Absolutely. You know, Vine was huge when for gathering information or dispersing information while everything was going on in Ferguson.
Right.
You know, you had people like, I can't even think of his name. I can't even think of anybody's name. I just blacked out just that quick. But you had people using Vine that were actually out at the protests showing us what was going on. I think this is before Twitter implemented its video. So you're seeing increments of 6 seconds of craziness. I remember that live stream that they had the night after. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was crazy.
Yeah.
That was nuts, you know, to see it up close and personal. And it wasn't one of those things where it's something where, because people think that when images are manipulated, perspectives are manipulated, that comes from the media. The other side can do that too with social media. You know, I can turn my phone a certain way. I can tell a certain side of the story that would paint. If you and I get into a conflict, I can paint a picture to make me be the victim and you be the antagonizer if I wanted to. That's the way technology and, you know, coupled up with some sort of mentality. But that was raw footage. So you saw people peacefully protesting. You saw other people who were intentionally antagonizing the police, which then, you know, so you saw two different responses from the police. You saw the police that were responding in a way to people who were peacefully protesting, and you saw how the police were responding to people who were intentionally antagonizing. There were people who were going down to Ferguson to protest. I had cousins down there that were telling me that there were people who were going down there to start trouble. So again, poking the hornet's nest.
Right.
You know, so yeah.
And then in the aftermath of what happened in Ferguson. So I'll keep it local real quick on Ferguson, and then I'll sort of go a little wider. So you have spent a lot of time in the St. Louis area.
Absolutely.
Most of my life. Right. And we talked about this on previous episodes where we covered this issue. But just to give people a quick perspective of, you have talked on the show before about it's not like what's the best way to put this? If you're a person of color who grew up or has spent any time in the St. Louis metro area, these racial, I'll say issues, although that's a probably bad term. Let's just say these problems are not news, right?
No.
And in fact, The St. Louis area is notoriously segregated.
Yep. Extremely segregated. You can't even go. You have to intentionally go down into East St. Louis. They built the highway over it.
Right.
So you have to pass it. You know, before, as a kid and as a teenager, you had to go through East St. Louis to sort of continue to, you know, through wherever you're trying to get to if you're in that area. Nowadays, you can go right over it. You won't even know it exists if you don't want to. That's a problem. Especially given the condition of East St. Louis, just how worse it's gotten since, you know, I was last there. It's terrible. There's no way a human should be able to live in that city. There's no way. It's that bad. But there's an entire community there that exists. And the city building the highways over it basically says, we don't care about what's going on. That doesn't affect... That's only necessary when we need it to be necessary. So elections and, you know, things to benefit whatever. But, you know, just on a regular day, do we have compassion for those people? To me, that is a statement that says no, we don't.
Compassion is a really interesting word. It's something that you don't hear about often when I think about, I'll go a little bit wider now because this is something I'm really interested in talking about. One of the things that emerged after sort of the notion of it's really funny, right, to see like modern TV news talk about like hashtags and things like that. But one of the things that emerged as soon as the notion of Black Lives Matter became a phrase that people knew, the immediate and so inevitable backlash was All Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that comes from people who hear that phrase and go, well, yeah, of course, all lives matter. It's a combination of ignorance, but I think a lack of compassion drives some of that, you know? Were you surprised at all by the All Lives Matter backlash?
No. No. Nothing surprised. And I don't mean to sound like I don't mean to sound like this, but not too much surprises me nowadays. Mm. Not too much. And I don't mean that in a pessimistic way, but this year showed us a lot.
What do you mean by that?
It's almost like a lot of people care about things only when it benefits them and benefits their own agenda. We all have agendas, whether we want to believe it or not. Like, agenda has been made out to be a bad word. Oh, it's an agenda. Like, no, you have a goal or something in mind that you want to see prosper. So whether that's an ideology, whether that's a brand, whatever it is, you want to see that prosper. That's an agenda. And right. I saw a lot of agendas crossing paths that kind of were sort of parallel, but then there'd be one or two things that didn't correlate. So now all of a sudden it's, you know, so now you've got a lot of conflict in there. You know, there's just a lot of conflict. And so my biggest concern wasn't the fact that these people, because whether they're black, white, or whatever, because, you know, I don't know if we're going to get into, you know, more recently within the last few months, we've been seeing some white kids get killed by cops and the response or lack thereof from the community or from the public. You know, so I missed my point. Dang it. Oh, well. But, you know, there was just a lot. Your agenda was so you had such a desire to want to see the idea in your mind come to fruition that the idea in your mind took precedence over receiving or gathering or getting justice for these people, for these kids whose lives, or just from these people whose lives were taken unnecessarily. Mm. I saw that a lot. A lot of selfishness sort of came to the forefront. Not sort of, did come to the forefront. And that's where you get things like, well, all lives matter. Of course they do. Of course they do.
That's the whole point.
Of course they do. Everybody's life matters. If you are listening to this show, your life matters. Our lives matter. It's important. But in this instance, we are seeing a consistent trend where African Americans are being murdered unnecessarily. And we're seeing constant examples of brute force, you know, manipulative judgment, bad character, just stuff. And it's not fair. So we want to see justice for that. But, you know, of course you can't focus on one small thing because everybody's going to get offended.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.